Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And in 1953, after the end of the Korean War, thousands of prisoners from both sides were faced with a choice, whether to return home or to go with their captors after the war had ended. Chloe Hajimatheu has been speaking to one of a very small number of Americans who chose communism.
It's autumn 1953, and Pathé News is reporting on an unprecedented repatriation of prisoners of war.
In Korea, Operation Comeback begins. 22,500 Chinese and North Korean troops take the winding road to freedom. It is their own wish that they should not return to their homelands, stoutly refusing to live under communist rule again. The system of allowing prisoners to choose whichever country they wish resulted in only 21 Americans and one British Marine electing not to return home.
I don't think it ever occurred to the U.S. or the Army that there would be GIs who would choose to go someplace else other than their own country. My reasoning was they really have embraced socialism, so let me see what it's like. I'll check it out.
After fighting in a war that set the West against communist forces, David Hawkins and 20 other GIs made the astounding decision to check out life in a country both feared and loathed by their nation.
We never really talked about it that much among ourselves, but I can tell you that we were pretty much apolitical. I know I was. They said, we don't care if you're political or not. You can be just what they call a progressive worker. And I'm going, that's me. I'm a progressive worker. I never thought of the consequences.
David was only 17 when he was first sent to the front lines in Korea. There, the United Nations and American troops were defending South Korea against the Chinese, who, with the backing of the Soviet Union, were supporting the North Korean aggressors. Within a few months of his arrival, David was injured.
When I woke up, it was daylight, and I was in a cave, which turned out to be a Chinese field hospital. And this doctor handed me a little piece of shrapnel that he'd taken out of my leg and says, we are your friends, we won't hurt you. They took me to a clearing camp called Puchin. We called it Death Valley.
Why did you call it that?
There was no heat, with temperatures exceeding 42 below zero. Myself and the others that were with me, we all had contracted frostbitten feet and hands, all of us. I lost a little toe on my left foot and all the ends of my toes. We were all covered with lice. We were starting to develop scabies. All of us had dysentery. We were only there a week or two before people actually started dying. The Chinese would come to the door and he would count the number of people in the room. And then shortly afterwards, there would be a big wooden bowl of soupy sorghum. We had a serving of that once a day. Well, we soon learned, because it was so cold and everything, that you didn't have to worry about decomposition. Nobody was smelling. So we hit on the idea that if somebody died, we'd just prop him up with his back against the wall. And then when the guy came to count, we would get that ration. That was kind of the way we got extra food.
How many prisoners died at the camp?
We were on a very thin line of survival there. They had captured probably better than 7,000 American servicemen. And within the first 3 months, over 2,000 of those people had died. At the end of that time, and I think there were 26 in my room, I remember that, 7 walked out in April and 3 of us went out on ox carts because we couldn't walk. I was just 17. I turned 17 on the way to Korea. So maybe that youth let me survive. I don't know.
After several months, things began to improve for David and his fellow soldiers. They were moved to another camp where the conditions were far better. This would be his home for almost 3 years.
When we first got back and they got us all cleaned up and kind of squared away, they started the indoctrination program. For the first almost year that we were there, we've spent most of the day with indoctrination. They had built up on the hills by headquarters this like a theater with wooden benches. And they would lecture us for 6 or 7 hours a day on the evils of capitalism and the great things about Marx, Engels, Marxism and political science and et cetera, et cetera.
Did it have any effect on you?
No, it didn't work. We would we'd listen to them, and then we'd have to go back to our squads, and we were supposed to talk about the evils of capitalism and the unjust war in Korea. And when we got back to the squads, we would all sit around in circles and talk about cars and women and that sort of thing, like GIs do.
What was the relationship like between the prisoners and the guards?
They didn't call us prisoners. They called us students. We were the result of what they had determined to be the lenient treatment policy toward prisoners of war. They treated us very civilly.
Were you surprised by that?
Well, absolutely. You know, I'm like everybody else. You hear stories about how prisoners of war were treated, and the Chinese had a reputation of being great at torture. So yeah, we were surprised that, oh my God, and at first we were expecting the worst, and when they started treating us well, I said, well, that's great. I appreciate that.
In fact, David was so impressed by the way the Chinese treated him, he decided to return with them to Beijing, where he enrolled at the university to study the language.
Now, when I got out of college, what I did then was that I applied for and received a commercial driver's license from the Chinese, and I went to a place called Wuhan, and I drove a big 10-ton Czechoslovakian dump truck for this factory, and I was the only foreigner in the whole city. People were not shy. They would say, well, where are you from? And I'd say, well, guess. And then they'd go through the big routine and tell them, no, I'm an American. And they wouldn't believe me. We were like heroes. They wanted to know what your lifestyle was like and where you lived. It was kind of like meeting some kind of a celebrity of some kind.
Into Hong Kong walked three former American soldiers who chose communism 2 years ago in Korea, but now have had enough. Escorted by British officials, the dishonorably discharged GIs are considered prohibited immigrants, but America agrees to accept them as citizens.
Back in the USA, the soldiers who'd turned their backs on their country had been labelled turncoats and traitors. Pathé News covered the first Americans who began drifting home from China.
Otho Bell, 24, says he attempted suicide in communist China. William Coward, 23, describes communist farm life as hell. Although expecting prosecution, they all prefer America and an uncertain fate.
But after 3 years in China, David was ready to face his own uncertain fate back home.
I didn't think too much about the consequences, but I thought it was time to leave that regime. And that was, I told the Chinese that I thought I was ready to come home. And a week later, I was on my way out. That was the only time I was really nervous, was when I got back to the States.
Well, the military had discharged you, so you didn't face any legal issues. But how did it feel to be back?
My hardest part was that I had become China, what we call China-ized. Chinese called Chunghua. My thought processes and everything were in Chinese. And the fact that I was so young when I first came back, when I was in China, I'm dealing with people older than I, much more sophisticated politically, and I found it very shallow, and I couldn't deal with people on that level when I came back. I had a hard time for the first couple of years that I was back until it finally began to acclimate. I started getting a lot of people calling me, and colleges invited me to lecture at their schools. And that was very surprising that there was no animosity.
Do you have any regrets about what you did?
No, I never had regrets. No. You know, the one big thing that I learned about going to China was how lucky we are here in the United States. The lifestyle that we have, our government's not perfect, but I think it's one of the best in the world. So I learned so much. I learned to be a better American. If nothing else, I'm a real patriot.
At 78, David Hawkins now lives in California. And to this day, he still uses the skills he learned in China by driving trucks for a living.
Chloe Hadjimatheu. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.